This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Our hour of old-time radio crime begins with Crime and Peter Chambers this week. We'll hear the April 6th, 1954 episode titled The Burke Murder Frame. After that, it's Dragnet and The Big Poison, their story from September 7th, 1950.
Crime and Peter Chambers. Created by Henry Kane, transcribed and starring Dane Clark. A private investigator, duly licensed and duly sworn, Peter Chambers.
You're a private eye. That's your business. Anything else? That's for laughs. You've got a slant of sun coming in the office window, your feet are on the desk, and you're relaxed. Business is lousy, but you've got no kicks. You're young, you're strong, you've got a few bucks in the bank. And it's a beautiful day.
You, Peter Chambers?
All of me, lady. Beautiful day, isn't it?
Not for you. Not for long, anyway.
She's a cute little trick, but nervous as a puppy with fleas. She's wearing a tan suit molded to her figure and properly protruding. The rest is in perfect taste. Black nylons, black shoes, black blouse, and black gloves. So she spoils it. She dips into her bag, and what she produces doesn't quite go with the ensemble. Because now she's wearing a pearl-handled gun in her right fist. Looks like a .38, and is pointing directly at you. So you scrape back out of your chair, and you go to her.
Stand back. Stand back, I tell you.
Honey, you're not even holding the gun right.
I know what I'm doing. Keep away from me.
Now you're shaking like you're practicing to be a cooch dancer. Now relax, little lady.
Keep away, please, please.
Okay, now. I've got the gun, and you're still shaking. Now sit down, lady. What's your name?
Elsa Corey.
What do you do?
Do?
For a living. A gun ma, you ain't.
I'm an actress.
Working?
Yes.
Well, come on, sister. This is like pulling teeth. Let's have it all in one lump.
I have the second lead in The Lady Dances. It's in rehearsal. It's my first real job. It's produced by Jack Burke. He hired me. Anything else?
Where do you live?
1013 East 39th Street, 2B. Oh, please don't point that gun at me.
It's your gun, remember? Okay. I drop it in my jacket pocket like so. See? No more gun. Now, what's this jiggle all about?
Jiggle?
Look, it's a beautiful day. I'm sitting around with my feet on the desk, dreaming my own personal little dream. So a dame drops in, wriggling around a Roscoe, and the Roscoe is blinking its eye at me, so I got a right to ask. What's it all about?
Well, I can't...
Oh, that's coherent. Now, let's do it incoherent this time.
I came here to kill you.
Hmm? Why?
I was sent.
By whom?
Bruce Burke.
Bruce Burke, huh? Well, it's all in the family. Jack Burke, Bruce Burke, two lonely brothers. Well, I never met your producer, but Bruce. Brucey boy, I know.
I'm sorry. I'm dreadfully sorry. Believe me, I don't think I could have. I couldn't. I know I couldn't.
All right, Elsa. Elsa Corey, simmer down. Just make yourself at home. I'll be back.
Where are you going?
To pay a call on Brucey boy. Maybe he can fill me in where you can't. And don't go away, baby. Papa will be back. Bruce Burke. A crumb right out of the bread box. A bum with a couple of million bucks. A sharpshooter that owns a nightclub called The Flame. You put the light out on The Flame about a year ago, hooked him for watering his stock. So, it's a beautiful day, only for you, suddenly, it's beginning to shape up cloudy. You get to his Park Avenue address, stick your finger on the buzzer. Nobody's home. Well, you've been there before, a 12-room suite for Brucey and his missus. Plus, she's got an apartment on the side. And just for kicks, you try the knob, and very conveniently, the door's not locked. You're inside, but you don't go far. Bruce Burke is napping, face down. Only when you go to turn him over, Brucey boy's napping days are finished. A guy stiff as a bugle, two bullet holes in his face, and his rigid leer is like a spiteful grin. And suddenly you feel it. Call it extra sensory perception. You know you've been yanked into a deal that you ought to get out of. Fast. You do a beeline for the door, you pull it open, and you're face to face with Detective Lieutenant Louis Parker, New York City Police, homicide.
Hi, Pete. Fancy is the same meeting you here.
Hi, Lieutenant. Same fancy goes for me. What brings you?
Jingle on the phone, what they call anonymous.
Oh, I see. Well, come in.
Thanks for the welcome, Shamus. Hey, what do we got here?
Corpse. Body used to belong to Bruce Burke. Plus.
Plus what, kid?
Plus, I've got a hunch, a little frame job with me in the middle. Yeah, take a look at this. A little encumbrance I'm carrying in my pocket.
I handle it, you notice, by the muzzle. Pearl handle 38 revolver. Okay, what scoop?
Break it, Lieutenant. I've a vague notion you're going to find two shells discharged. I also have a notion that ballistics will show that the two bullets in this monkey came out of the gun you're holding.
Mm-hmm. Two hunks of lead missing.
Figures. And my fingerprints on the handle. And my fingerprints on the doorknob. And me and Bruce Burke supposed to have a feud going.
I hope you got a good story for me, kid. We've been friends a long time.
And a little dame wearing gloves. I'll bet mine are the only fingerprints on that Roscoe.
Better be a good story, kiddo.
Salulu, Lieutenant. Lend an ear. You tell him the tale and he listens. Louis's an old friend. You've worked together for years. He promises a thorough check on the situation, and you promise to be down to see him to check the check. You leave him the pearl-handled pistol, and you leg her to the next spot that might furnish a little information. The Lady Dances is rehearsing at the Ascot on 48th off Broadway. Backstage, there's one solitary guy working a song on a piano.
Well, what do you want, Bub?
Looking for Jack Burke.
I'm Jack Burke.
Stands up from the piano, very fashionable type. White hair, slender figure, $200 suit.
Well, what is it, young man? What do you want here?
Oh, I thought there was a rehearsal going on.
It's off for a while.
Oh, may I ask
you? No, you may not ask. What do you want here?
Oh, name's Peter Chambers. I'm a private detective. I'd like to inquire about a young lady, Miss Elsa Corey.
I'm not messing into the affairs of every private shummus that comes barging backstage for some cockeyed reason of his own.
Now look, Mr. Burke, if
I haven't got the time
now. Just
now.
One little minute, Mr. Burke.
Oh, like that, is it? You want to play tough boy, huh? Willie!
A muscle-bound monster comes ambling out of the wings. The guy's 6'4" and practically as wide as he's long. Willie's got a face that's half moron, half pig. And the part of the pig is dangling in a couple of ham-like hands. But you're not worried about Willie. You've got a large ego and a lot of confidence. And you think you can take Willie if you had the time. But right now, you don't have the time. So you turn from Willie to get back to Jack Burke. But you've underestimated Willie. Willie's not as amiable as he looks. You get a hit in the head like a stroke of paralysis. And the lights blaze and start whirling. And then there are no more lights. There's blackness. Whirling, spinning, black, blackness. You open your eyes and you're sitting on the sidewalk, sprawled like a drunk that forgot how to stop. You're backed against the stage door, but it's locked. You've got a bill to collect with a joker named Willie and a larger bill with his boss, Jack Burke, but you can't. Now. Thoughts joggle in your mind, and then you know where you're going. Loretta Burke is the wife of Bruce Burke, and she's got a lush little cave of her own on Central Park South. You head for it, thinking about her. Loretta Burke, who managed a nightclub called The Flame. You head for her diggings, and then you're there.
Hello, Mr. Chambers. To what do I owe the pleasure?
A lush blonde, 30 years younger than Bruce. A page boy blonde with shining hair and shining green eyes. and a figure that brings it to a full stop. Loretta Burke in silver lounging pajamas.
Always nice to see you, Mr. Chambers. May I offer a drink?
You may. I can use it.
Here you are, Mr. Chambers.
Thank you.
Well, you're not yourself today, are you? Gulping your drink.
Well, for a very recent widow, Mrs. Burke, you're certainly bearing up staunchly.
I didn't know that you knew.
Well, let's do a reverse on that, sweetie. I didn't know for sure that you knew.
Look, tough boy, I don't believe in mourning. I don't wear my heart on my sleeve.
No, what do you wear it?
Inside, where it belongs. I'm a gal with a lousy reputation, but in my own peculiar way, I loved him.
Maybe you did in your own peculiar way.
Well, let's put it this way. Whoever killed him, sooner or later, is going to face up to me. Now, you got any comment, Mr. Chambers?
I don't know. This started off as such a beautiful day, and me sitting around thinking about how business is lousy.
Maybe you ought to get out of here and see if you can't stimulate a little.
Gentle hint, Mrs. Burke?
I've got a lot of things to do.
I get it. Well, one question before I leave. You know a little dame by name of Elsa Corey?
Never heard of her.
Bye now. See you around.
You bet you will.
Outside, you called the office about Elsa Corey, but of course our little birdie has jumped the chicken coop. You do a small debate with yourself. Corey or Parker? Which one first? But you promised the lieutenant, so you mosey for police headquarters downtown. You're jogging up the steps when you see him coming out. In a hurry.
Well, the private eye, or is it the public enemy? You coming to give yourself up?
Lieutenant is jocular, but he looks worried. And when a friend looks worried, you begin to worry.
That was the murder gun, Pete, no question. I'm working it slow, working the angles first, because you're involved. But that little Elsa Corey better be around to back up your story.
Well, what else is new, Lieutenant?
Jack Burke's been scouting for dough for a show. He needs money. Bruce's wife, that doll, always needed dough. Well, they're both falling into it.
How?
Bruce Burke's will. Jack gets half the estate, Loretta Burke gets the other half, plus the nightclub goes to her.
Real cozy, huh?
Now look, pal, you're not one for throwing stones. Not in this case. So far, all I've really got is you.
Yeah. You've been a doll, Lieutenant, a living, breathing doll.
Well, don't depend on it, Pete, not for too long. I know you, but there's a DA who's beginning to champ at the bit, so let me go to work now.
Where are you heading for?
Date with Jack Burke.
Jack Burke? Where?
Casa Moretti, upstairs, private room, number 4.
Look, Louie, one more favor. Give me a 10-minute head start, huh?
Head start with whom?
Jack Burke. I've got a bill to collect, and it's overdue. 10 minutes, Lieutenant? Oh, please, Louie.
Okay, but I hope you know what you're doing.
Oh, I hope so, too. The Casa Moretti is in Greenwich Village, and it serves the longest, skinniest, most flavorsome spaghetti west of a little town called Rome, which they tell me is in Italy. Casa Moretti has a downstairs dining room and an upstairs private room where you can run yourself a tete-a-tete or a banquet, depending on your mood. Your mood right now is for a little private chatter, and you rub your knuckles against a door marked 4.
What? You again? Now, look here.
First, you clip him because you owe it to him.
No!
Then you close the door. Then you drag him into the room. And you give him a quick frisk, but there isn't a thing on him that's incriminating. So now you pick him up and deposit him in a chair. And you slap him back to consciousness.
What? What?
Live it up, Mr. Burke. Come on, listen to the birdie sing.
I'm listening. And you're no birdie. What do you want?
A bit of polite conversation, nothing more.
Well, what do you want?
Johnny One Note, that's me. Little lady by name Elsa Corey. Know her?
Yes, yeah, she's the second lead in the show we're rehearsing.
Know her any better than that?
She's an actress in my show, period.
Have it your way. According to her, she says your brother sent her to see me. Did you introduce her to your brother?
No.
You happen to know if your brother was acquainted with her?
My brother is dead.
I know that.
And from what I hear, you, a private eye by the name of Chambers, you hated his guts.
I'm supposed to know all about that, too.
All right. Is there anything else?
No. I told you all I wanted was a bit of polite conversation.
Well, then get out of here.
Say it nice.
Will you please leave, Mr. Chambers?
Oh, a pleasure, Mr. Burke. A pleasure indeed. There's one stop left. You've done the merry-go-round. You've gone the full circle. Elsa Corey said 1013 East 39th Street. Turns out to be a tinderbox. Ramshackle's an ancient barn on a prairie. Young actresses don't have it too easy, and that is a problem. You climb up to 2B and you knock on a door that's thinner than Melba toast and has about as much resistance. Nobody answers. You turn to leave and all of a sudden, a hunch comes up and clobbers you. You shove a shoulder at the rattletrap door and you lean hard. You're inside now. Little room with the barest of trimmings. And your hunch has paid off because you're not alone. Elsa Corey sits in a chair and looks at you, but her eyes aren't blinking. Elsa Corey. Her face mottled and blue bruises on her throat. Elsa Corey strangled to death. So, it's still a beautiful day. Only it's not day anymore. It's nighttime. You've gone home and you've put in a little afternoon sleeping, but it hasn't helped. You're weighed down deep in a jam and you feel it beginning to close in.
How goes it, Pete, boy?
Pretty bad.
Yeah, bad.
Detective Lieutenant Louis Parker, a nice guy and a good friend, but the expression on his face is that of a pallbearer with rheumatism doing his job on a rainy day.
Ain't good, pal. Stinks, in fact.
Yeah.
Elsa Corey, she's dead.
Yeah.
We got another one of them phone calls. Anonymous.
I can clear that for you.
Like how?
I made that phone call.
You did?
Yep. I busted into her place and I found her. Like what you found when you got there.
You know what it means, kid.
Got an idea?
You had one little out. An alibi witness named Elsa Corey. Now she ain't with us no more. Where's that leave you?
Crouched behind the eight ball, only keeps getting smaller.
Pete. You know how I feel about you, but... Want to come downtown with me now, fella? Tussle it out with the DA's people?
Well, must we...
What's left, kid?
Well, I've got a little night duty to attend to. I've been sort of resting up for it.
Night duty?
Yeah, now look. Let's make a date, Louis. I either collect a killer for you or I present myself.
Present yourself when?
Let's say tomorrow morning. Bright and early tomorrow morning. You either get a closed case by then or you've got me.
You know, I only work for a living, Pete. I can get kicked off the force
fast. I never crossed you up, Louie, ever. It's been a long time now, you and me. It's one for the storybooks. A private eye and a public cop who can work together and who respect each other. We got a deal.
Deal it is, yeah.
Bye, Lieutenant.
Bye, Detective.
The Flame is a nightclub on the outskirts of town, and that's your next stop. And the last stop, you figure, one way or another. You get the car out of the garage, you drive up and park in their parking lot. The club is a distance off, and you crunch through gravel on your way. You see a uniformed cop a distance off, but you don't see what's right close near you.
Easy does it, mister.
Well, if it ain't little Willie.
That's me, pal.
Willie's loaded with artillery and is jammed to your ribs.
Back up to that shed, mister. Double time we do it.
But you're not having any. You're not turning your back on Willie. You did that once, and once is enough. So the left comes down on the gun, and the right goes to the chin. And down goes Willie with me on top of him. The gun gets kicked out of the way, and Willie absorbs a few additional raps, and then my hands are around his throat.
You're choking me.
That's the general idea, Willie.
Let up, mister. Let up.
New position, Willie. Now I'm sitting across you like you're a hassock, and my fingers are still around that bull neck of yours. And you're a little weaker, Willie. You're quite a little weaker. Talk, Willie.
What? What do you want to know?
Why did you conk me backstage at the Ascot?
I got the signal from Jack.
You work for him?
Yeah.
Okay, I think we're in rhythm now. Why did you cloak Bruce Burke?
I didn't.
Oh, you need a little more pressure on your throat. Is that it?
No, I had nothing to do with Bruce.
Okay. Elsa Corey. Talk it up good now, Willie. Well, okay.
I went there. 39th Street. Jack sent me. I did a job on her like Jack told me to do.
Willie passes out of the picture. You get up off him, collect his gun, and go looking for the cop, and latch law onto Willie with instructions to deposit him in the lap of Detective Lieutenant Louis Parker. Then you brush at your clothes and you make for the nightclub. The joint is jumping and it's temptation, but you haven't got the time. You steer through the joyous people to the door marked Office of the Manager, and you open it without knocking.
Well, Peter Chambers, we were just talking about you. Close the door.
The other half of that we is Jack Burke. He's in a tuxedo. And Loretta is in a red off-the-shoulder job that almost gets your mind off your work. But the old mind comes right back to attention because dear Loretta shoves a lily white hand to the desk drawer and it comes up caressing an ugly 45.
Sit down, Mr. Chambers.
Oh, thanks. I'll stand.
Jack and I have been chatting about you.
In what connection?
In connection with the death of my husband.
Lady, you're pointing that gun in the wrong direction.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about Jack Burke, who dreamed himself up a foolproof little murder. Only I'm going to take it apart for him right now.
This had better be good.
Listen, this guy is in a jam with his show. He's looking for money all over town. Do you know whether he asked Bruce for a loan?
Yes, I know he did. And Bruce turned him down. Bruce had no confidence in the lady dancers.
So Bright Boy figured one out. If he bumps Bruce, he gets half of his estate. Even if he can't get the loot right away, he can borrow on the strength of it. So he kills him.
He's a liar.
He knows a little dame, second lead, Elsa Corey. This kid doesn't know which end is up. So he gives her the cleaned-up gun, and she's wearing gloves, so it's still clean.
What is she supposed to do with it?
She's supposed to come to me because Jack thinks there's bad blood between me and Bruce. She's to threaten me, not shoot me. No, no, nothing like that. And she's to tell me that Bruce sent her.
Bruce? Why Bruce?
Because this guy figured it exactly as it happened.
Oh.
I took the gun away from her. I went to Bruce to find out what it was all about. The door was conveniently left open for me, and I found Bruce like this bum had left him. And then a cop shows, spurred by an anonymous phone tip. Cute, huh?
Cute enough. Where's the girl? That Elsie Corey?
Yes, where is she?
Look at him wiggle. The big producer. Where is she? She's dead.
What?
He wasn't going to let her hang around to testify against him, was he? Did you ever hear of Willie?
Of course.
Willie choked her to death.
Proof, not words.
The law's
proof.
Caught up with Willie. He's yodeling out there like a broken-down jukebox.
Well, that's proof against Willie, not proof against me.
Look at him, squirming like a rat with his tail in a trap. Look at him. How much more proof do you want? The lady looks. Guilt is scribbled on him like the devil has written on his forehead. She lifts the gun, and for a minute you think it's for you, but it isn't. There isn't much left to look at when you get to him, and all of it is very dead.
All right. It's over, and it's done with.
Mind if I sit down for just a couple of minutes?
Sit.
It was a beautiful day before it shaped up cloudy.
But what are you talking about?
Then a dame comes in and threatens me with a gun, and I get myself jammed up with the law as a murder suspect, and I get pushed around by an ape named Willie, and then I almost catch up at the wrong end of your 45, but it's finally developed into business.
Business? From whom?
You.
Me?
Next stop for you is the pokey. Maybe with a good lawyer, who knows, it turns out justifiable homicide.
That's business for a lawyer, not for you.
True enough, but a lawyer's got to have facts. Now, who's better at getting up facts for you than yours truly?
I'm beginning to see what you mean. How much?
Well, for a lady who's coming into a million plus a swanky nightclub, how's $5,000?
You talked yourself into a client, Mr. Chambers. You're hired.
Thank you, ma'am. Thanks a bunch.
And there you've had Crime and Peter Chambers. Dane Clark was starred as Peter Chambers. Crime and Peter Chambers, transcribed, was created, produced, and written by Henry Kane. Others in the cast were Bill Zuckert, heard as Lieutenant Parker, Fran Carlin as Loretta, and Everett Sloan as Jack. It was directed by Fred Way, and this is Fred Collins inviting you to tune in again next week, same time, same station, for Dane Clark in Crime and Peter Chambers.
Visit with Fibber McGee and Molly tonight on the NBC Radio Network. The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent. Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a homicide detail. An old couple suddenly disappear from one of the fashionable neighborhoods in your city. There's no trace of them, not a clue to their whereabouts. Foul play is suspected. Your job, find them.
If you want a long cigarette, smoke the best of all long cigarettes. Smoke extra mild Fatima. Yes, Fatima is the king-size cigarette, which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos superbly blended to make it extra mild. To give Fatima a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette. That's why Fatima has more than doubled its smokers coast to coast. Enjoy extra mild Fatima yourself. Best of all, long cigarettes.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Saturday, September 30th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day shift out of homicide. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Captain Blaine Steed. My name's Friday. It was 3:45 p.m. when I got to room 67A. Missing persons.
Hi, Joe.
Hi. Where's Al?
Next door. I'll be back in a minute.
Oh. There's a phone message for you in the book. It's from your wife.
What is it this time?
She didn't say.
Sure been a bad week.
Why? What's the matter?
Lucille.
Who?
Our cat.
Again?
Kittens. Had 11 of them by the time I left the house. He was a healthy kid.
Yeah.
Don't know what I'm going to do with him. Hey, your mother likes cats, doesn't she, Joe?
You gave us two from the last litter. We still got them. They're as healthy as their mother.
Yeah?
Never pass up a meal.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Al.
Sorry to keep you waiting. Just getting this report straightened out. Here you go.
Uh-huh. Mr. and Mrs. Walter Apperson.
How long have they been missing?
Well, today's the fourth day. They're an elderly couple. One of their next-door neighbors got a little worried when he didn't see him around the house. Came in yesterday and filed a 316 on him.
Let's see. Clarence Stokely. Is that the neighbor?
Yeah. It says here he lived next to the Appersons for 28 years. Never known him to take off like this. Checked Apperson's cottage out there. Dirty dishes on the kitchen table. Not the way an old couple would leave a house normally.
How about friends and relatives?
Miss Stokely called them. None of them have seen or heard from the Appersons for a week. Checked out two of their three living relatives, cousin in Eagle Rock, niece in Alhambra. They don't know a thing.
Hmm. Wonder if I can see that, Ben.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Well, how about the third relative? Nephew, is that it, Joe?
Yeah. Frank Apperson. Says here he goes to a private college out near Monrovia.
Yeah, I haven't been able to contact the kid. He's away on a vacation.
Possibly the old couple might be with him?
Not according to Stokely. Says the Appersons seldom spend any time away from their home.
That's all we've got to go on, huh? Just the neighbor's story?
Yeah. Well, he says he checked the garage, too. The Apperson's car's gone.
How does that tie in?
Well, Mr. Apperson hasn't driven the car for the last year and a half. He has a nephew or some friend drive whenever he wants to go out. One more thing. May mean something, may not.
What's that, Al?
Mrs. Apperson's an invalid.
Yeah?
She hasn't left the neighborhood in 10 years.
4 p.m. Ben and I left the office and drove out to interview the neighbor of the missing couple. After checking at his home, we finally located him at his place of business, a small barber shop at the corner of 54th Street and Maxford Place. The chipped gold lettering on the window read, Jim Dandy Tonsorial Parlor. Smaller lettering in the right-hand corner of the window read, Proprietor Clarence Stokely. Except for a man in a white barber's smock sitting in the first chair, the shop was empty.
How do you do, gentlemen?
Hi.
How are you? You Clarence Stokely?
That's right.
Police officers, Mr. Stokely. I'd like to talk to you about the missing persons report you filed yesterday.
Oh, yes. Glad to help. You found out anything yet?
You know the Appersons pretty well, do you, Mr. Stokely?
28 years. Sure worried about Walter and Kate. Never known them to do anything like this. Say, I couldn't be of service to you, could I?
Well, I just had a haircut a few days ago. How about you, Joe? Looks like you could stand a trim.
We could talk it over while I cut your hair. Don't think we'd be disturbed. They still look well.
Yeah. Okay, fine.
Here, I'll take your coat.
Oh, thank you.
Push the chair there.
You bet.
Mr. and Mrs. Apperson didn't mention anything about going away on a trip, did they?
Not a word. That's what makes it so strange. Now, let me fix this around your neck here.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Play cards with them twice a week, usually. Katie Apperson's a fine whist player. Want me to take some off the sides here, officer?
Yeah, please. Not too much, though. When did you first notice the Appersons weren't home?
Tuesday night. We thought we might go over and play some cards.
I see.
Better enough off right here, officer?
Let me see. Yeah, that's fine. How is it you waited until yesterday to report the Appersons missing?
Wife and I are great friends of Walt and Katie's, but it's certainly none of our business if they want to go off for a few days. Besides, we thought if anything was wrong, Buzz would have said something.
Who is Buzz?
Anderson's nephew, Buzz. Name's Frank, but every calls him Buzz.
I thought he was away at school, a place out near Monrovia.
Yeah, Stanley College, private school. And he only stays there part of the time. He's usually home early in the week.
Well, we were under the impression that this nephew, Buzz, was on a vacation.
That's so. That's the first I've heard. Funny, Walt and Katie would have told us. Oop, apple?
No, it's all right.
Clipper's a little dull. Head down.
You, think the nephew might account for the Apperson's car being missing? You think he might have taken it on his vacation?
Possible, I guess, but I think Walt would have mentioned it. That car was old, but he was particular about it. Maybe sit it out on top here a little?
All right, fine. Do you know the nephew at all?
Pretty well. Nice young fella.
He got along with his aunt and uncle all right, did he?
Yes, indeed. Buzz loves them both.
Do you have any idea where the Appersons might be, Mr. Stolfer?
No, I don't. Neither does my wife. That's why we called you people. We don't mean to be Budinskys, but we're worried. Maybe just a little more off the top, officer?
No, I think it's fine. It's okay. You have no idea where we might find the nephew, Buzz?
Not if he's away on vacation. Might check with the school. Buzz might have gone off with a couple of his friends. A little something to dampen that down?
Yeah, fine.
Yeah, that porch light of theirs been burning for 3 nights and 3 days. It really kicks up the old electric bill.
Well, maybe the Appersons may have overlooked it.
Maybe. All right, sir. Yeah, it's a good-looking haircut, if I say so myself.
Yeah. It's fine. Oh, here you go.
Thank you.
Oh, here's our card, Mr. Stokely. We'll be checking with you.
Bye.
Bye.
Can I borrow your comb? Barber never combs your hair right.
That's not going to help you.
Huh?
It's the way he cut it.
What do you mean?
He put the part on the other side.
After we left Clarence Stokely's barber shop, we drove out to the Apperson home on 54th Street just below Seaboard Avenue. We checked the house from top to bottom. The closets and the bedrooms were well stocked with clothes. None of the luggage seemed to be missing. In the basement, back on one of the cupboard shelves, we found a bottle of cyanide. It was half filled. In the kitchen, we found dirty dishes still lying on the table. We put in a call to Ray Pinker at the crime lab, and he came out and took sample scrapings from each of the three plates and specimens from each of the half-filled cups of coffee on the table. He also took along the bottle of cyanide to examine it for fingerprints. Ben and I called the record bureau just as a matter of routine and asked for any make and warrants on the nephew, Frank Buzz Apperson. R and I called back with the information that Frank Apperson had been arrested for grand theft auto 6 weeks before. His trial was pending. We checked back with the barber, Clarence Stokely. He knew nothing about the trouble. The next morning, Sunday, with the help of school authorities at Stanley College near Monrovia, we got in touch with the parents of two of Buzz Apperson's friends. They told us, as far as they knew, Apperson was on a camping trip with their sons. They were expected back in the next day around noontime. From one of the boarding students at Stanley College, we got the name of Buzz Apperson's girlfriend, a Miss Norma Louise Bernard. She lived in San Marino. Sunday night, we drove out to interview her.
I don't know what I can tell you, Sergeant. Buzzy's on a camping trip with two of the fellas from school. That's all I know.
When did he leave? Do you know, Mr. North?
Last Monday morning. They left from school, said they'd be gone for a week. They're coming back tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. You know Buzz Apperson pretty well?
Yes, I do, as well as anyone, I guess.
What is he, just a casual date?
Oh, Buzzy and I have been going steady for almost a year now.
I see.
How old are you?
I'm 19.
Have you ever met the Appersons, his aunt and his uncle?
Just once. They're awfully sweet.
How did Buzz get along with them, do you know?
Well, fine, I guess. The only argument Buzz ever told me about was a month ago. He wanted more allowance, and his uncle said no.
Was Buzz ever in any trouble, to your knowledge, Miss Bernard?
I don't think I know what you mean. What kind of trouble?
Well, I mean, was he ever in any trouble at the college or with the law in any way?
Oh, you mean that car Buzz took about 2 months ago?
Yeah.
We were supposed to go to this school dance, and Buzz didn't have a car. I guess he was ashamed. He said he knew the fellow he borrowed the car from, but the day after the dance, the cops came.
How did his uncle react to that?
Well, there was a terrible row, Buzz said. I really shouldn't be telling you Bud Maysby's promise.
How were feelings between the boy and his uncle before he left on the trip? Did he mention anything to you about that?
Well, we had a date last Sunday night. I asked him how things were at home. He didn't seem to want to talk about it.
The last time you saw him was Monday morning. Is that right?
Yes, just before he left on the camping trip.
Are you sure he went on that trip?
Well, of course I'm sure.
How do you mean?
He said, no matter who asks you, I went on a camping trip. He said it a couple of times.
Do you offer any explanation?
No, but I knew everything was all right.
Oh, is that so? How?
I could tell. The way he kissed me.
The next morning, Monday, Ben and I checked with missing persons. There was no additional information on the missing couple. We phoned the barber, Clarence Stokely. He had seen or heard nothing further of Mr. and Mrs. Apperson. We went down to the bank where the Appersons had their account. And with the help of the manager, we found that three checks had been passed on the Apperson checking account since the previous Wednesday, a full day after the missing couple had been last seen. One check was for $100 and two for $50 each. All of them had been cashed in Los Angeles and all bore the signature Walter Apperson. After examination, it was found each signature had been carefully forged. 10:45 a.m. We went back to the office.
Hi, you two. Going someplace?
Oh, hi, Ray. No, just coming.
You finished checking that stuff through the crime lab?
Yeah. I was passing over this way. I thought I'd drop off the report for you. Got it right here.
How'd it go?
Fingerprints on that bottle of cyanide. Leighton Prince got a make. Here's the name on it.
Frank Buzz Apperson.
You look over those dirty dishes we found in the Apperson house?
Checked them through. Nothing.
How about the samples you took from those cups?
Whoever drank that coffee is in trouble. It's loaded.
Yeah?
Enough cyanide to kill a horse.
You are listening to Dragnet, the case history of a police investigation presented in the public interest by Fatima Cigarettes.
If you smoke a long cigarette, it will be in your interest to listen to this case history recorded by a typical Fatima smoker.
Hi there. My name is Bab Beckwith. Bab, that's short for Bethany Ann Beckwith. I live in New York City and I'm a fashion stylist. The other day at a showing of the new fall styles, I ran out of cigarettes. A friend of mine, a designer, introduced me to the new long Fatima. I really wish someone had told me about them sooner. Fatimas are a lot milder than the cigarettes I've been smoking. And they have a delightful flavor, too. I'm very glad to recommend them to you. Because I know, from experience, it's wise to smoke extra mild Fatimas.
And more smokers every day are finding that out. Actual figures show extra mild Fatima has more than doubled its smokers coast to coast.
So enjoy extra mild Fatima yourself.
The king-size cigarette, which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos, superbly blended to make it extra mild.
You will prefer Fatima's much different, much better flavor and aroma.
You will agree.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
The best of all long cigarettes.
Monday, 1 p.m. We obtained a specimen of Frank Buzz Apperson's signature, and we had Don Myers in handwriting check it out against the signatures on the three checks. Both styles of handwriting matched in every detail. At 1:30 p.m., the parents of Buzz Apperson's two friends called to tell us that their sons were back from their camping trip. We checked the Apperson home. The nephew wasn't there. We drove out to see his two friends. Under questioning, one of them finally broke and admitted that Buzz Apperson had not gone with them on the camping trip. In the process of questioning the boys, one of them told us that he had been with the suspect 2 days before the trip when he purchased some medicine at the campus drugstore. We went to the drugstore and checked the prescription book. It showed Frank Buzz Apperson had purchased and signed for a bottle of cyanide 2 days before the disappearance of his aunt and uncle. Ben and I drove back to the Apperson house. When we arrived, the officers on stakeout had the boy in custody.
No, I'm sorry, officers. I wish I could help you out, but, well, maybe it's not as bad as you think.
When did you last see your aunt and uncle?
Monday, before I left on the camping trip.
They're in the habit of going off like this, are they?
Oh, sure. Aunt Kate and Uncle Walter have friends all over. They go on trips all the time.
Is that so? How do they get there?
They drive, both of them. They've been driving for years.
You talk to your uncle's friend, this Mr. Stokely next door. He says your aunt and uncle haven't been driving for at least a year and a half.
Stokely, the barber? He's one of the neighborhood cranks, Sergeant. Anybody around here can tell you that. Minds everybody's business but his own.
You don't seem too worried about your aunt and uncle. Think they're all right?
Well, we'd have heard by now if they weren't, don't you think, sir? They probably took off on a trip. That's just about the size of it, I think.
Now, how about this trip of yours?
Sir?
Well, this camping trip that you just come from.
Oh, a couple of fellows from school. We went camping up by Big Bear for a week.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good fishing for September. Ever been up there?
Yeah, have you?
Well, sure. I just said that's where we've been camping. Say, I'm a little thirsty. There's a couple of bottles of ale in the refrigerator. Careful, bottle?
No, thanks.
Well, would you mind if I had one? Sure could use it.
No, you go right ahead. We can talk in the kitchen.
Place is in kind of a mess. I guess I'll have to go in and clean it up.
Is your aunt usually leave in a hurry like this?
Not usually, no. Dishes all over the place. She probably figured she'd wait till she got back to clean up.
Mm-hmm.
Aunt Kate does things like that once in a while.
That's so?
Yeah, she's like that sometimes. Well, happy days.
Yeah. Okay, Buzz, you want to tell us?
Hmm?
Where are they? Your aunt and uncle, what happened?
Say, I don't think I know what you're talking about. What's the trouble?
Come on, Buzz, you know what the trouble is. Let's have a straight story. It's going to save a lot of time.
Sir?
We can draw it out as long as you like. It'll be a lot easier if you cooperate.
Look, I don't know what you're thinking, Sergeant, but whatever it is, I don't understand you. What are you getting at?
Something's happened to your aunt and uncle, and we're pretty sure you know what it is.
Well, how could I? I've been away on this camping trip.
You've been away, but not on a camping trip.
Sir?
We've checked you out from the day you came to live with your aunt and uncle, Buzz. You're going to make us spell out the whole record for you?
But I... been away. I just got back. I don't know what's happened.
We found a bottle of cyanide in the basement cupboard. Your fingerprints are all over it.
Well, sure, that figures. We use it for bug poison in the garden. I take care of the garden. I use it all the time.
You use it in coffee?
Sir?
The police chemist checked what was left in two of the cups that were on that table there. Cyanide in both of them, enough to kill six people. Now, look, boy, we've talked to your neighbors, your teachers, your girlfriend, Norma, and those two pals you were supposed to go camping with. Now, we can drag all of them out if we have to. They're going to make a liar out of you.
Sir?
I think you got it the first time.
Well, there couldn't be any cyanide in those cups. Why should there be?
We think you can tell us that.
But I can't. I don't know anything about this. I haven't any idea what you're talking about. Is this some kind of a gag?
You know better than that.
How about those checks, Buzz?
Sir?
The ones you forged your uncle's signature on. You need the money that bad?
I didn't forge any checks. I was away on a camping trip. Dave and Willie were with me. They can tell you.
You got in a row with your uncle. Maybe about that stolen car. Is that how it happened?
It had nothing to do with it. I want to see Norma. I want to talk to Dave and Willie. They'll tell you.
How about the man at the campus drugstore?
Sir?
The one you bought the cyanide from. You want to talk to him, too?
Look, are you two fellas kidding me? This must be some kind of a gag, is it?
Your aunt and uncle are missing. There's evidence of foul play. Now, does that sound like a joke?
Well, how should I know where they are? I wasn't there. I want to talk to Norma. I want to see Dave and Willie. They'll tell you. Why don't we drive over and see him now?
It's all right with us. Want to get your coat?
Sure. Norma's the girl I'm engaged to. Dave and Willie are my best friends. They know everything about me. A couple of real nice guys.
That so?
Sure.
Well, let's go, babe.
Yeah. Dave and Willie have been all through school with me. They can vouch for me.
Yeah?
Sure. You can take their word, too.
We will. 5:50 p.m. We left the Apperson house, drove across town, and headed over the Arroyo Seco toward the home of the suspect's friend, Dave Killifer. 6:33 p.m. We took a right turn off the freeway, headed south for another mile, and finally pulled up in front of the Killifer home. Buzz Apperson's friend, Dave, met us at the front door.
What's it all about, anyway, Buzz? What's the pitch? Well, that's what I want to know. Look, is this some kind of a gag you guys cooked up on me?
We were on the trip, Buzz. I don't know anything about any gag. What's all this about your aunt and uncle?
I don't know. That's what these officers want to find out.
I'd like to have you tell us again, Dave. Was Buzz here with you on that camping trip?
Sure, that's why we came over. Now, tell him about it, you know.
All right, let's have it, Dave. Was he with you on that trip?
These officers aren't kidding, Buzz. They want the truth.
Well, tell him I was with you and Willie. We went to Big Bear.
We're looking for your aunt and uncle. I'm not going to lie now. You didn't go to Big Bear with us.
All right, Dave, thanks.
Well, he's lying, officers. Who put you up to this stunt, Dave? They'll throw you in the jug for a gag like this. Who's behind it?
You're the guy who said it was a gag. You told us to tell everybody you were up at Big Bear with Willie and me. How about leveling? What's it about?
He's lying.
What's it about? You've got nothing to hide. Have you?
He's lying. You can tell that, can't you? Let's go talk to Willie. He'll tell you the truth.
Joe?
All right. Thank you, Dave. That's all.
All right, Sergeant. Sure there isn't anything I can do?
No, thanks. Just the same. Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Anybody could tell he was lying. Isn't that right, Sergeant?
Well, he's your friend, Buzz. Why do you say that?
Well, he was just plain lying, that's all. Couldn't you tell?
No, I couldn't. How about you, Ben?
Not me. Why would you lie, Buzz? You told us he was your pal.
Some kind of a stupid gag they're pulling. A gang in the fraternity I belong to. Dave's one of them. They've done it before. I don't know why they're lying, but they are.
Where's your friend Willie live?
Sir?
You said you wanted to drive over and have us talk to Willie?
Oh, yeah.
And where does he live?
Look, would you mind very much?
How's that?
I got a terrible headache. Would you mind very much just driving around a while? I'd like to clear my head a little. I can't figure this thing out.
All right. Why don't you roll down the window there, Buzz?
Okay. Yeah. The air feels good. Sure is hot out tonight.
Yeah,
Been a pretty long summer, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has.
I guess maybe we ought to forget about going over to Willie's place. He strings along with the rest. He'd probably lie, too.
You said you wanted us to have a talk with him.
Yeah, but I've been thinking about it. He'd only lie. It'd be better if we drove over to see Norma. That's the girl I'm engaged to.
Yeah, that's what we understand.
If anybody can give you a straight story, Norma can. She doesn't live far. Straight down the road here into San Marino?
Yeah, we know.
Oh. Sure would appreciate it if you'd drive over there.
Okay.
Norma can straighten this thing out. Swell girl. We're going to get married as soon as we can.
Oh?
Yeah. She saw me leave on that trip to Big Bear. She won't lie to you. Sure wish my aunt and uncle had left a note where they were going. All this trouble.
You mind if I lay out a couple of things for you, Buzz?
Now, what do you mean?
When a police officer picks somebody up, he's got a good reason for it.
Yeah, but Dave was lying, Sergeant. You know that.
It's a lot more than what Dave had to say. Now, you've done something wrong. We don't know what exactly, but we've got an idea, and we're going to find out.
You can't prove anything. I got that cyanide for the garden. We use it around the house for different things.
You don't use it in coffee cups. What happened, boy? Where's your aunt and uncle?
Next turn for Norma's house, up by the signal. Turn left.
Yeah.
Come on, Buzz. You know what happened. You're going to have to face it sooner or later. If it's not tonight, then tomorrow morning or tomorrow night or the night after.
But I don't know what happened.
The facts say you do, and they're not going to disappear. Now, you made the problem. It's going to stick out in front of you till you find an answer. How about it?
Norma will know what to do. Wait till I talk to Norma.
Why don't you stand up and face it, boy? Getting your girl mixed up in this isn't going
to
help.
She'll know what to do.
Can she find your aunt and uncle? Can she? How about the three checks? How about him? Can she explain those signatures that you forged? Maybe those fingerprints on the cyanide bottle. Can she help you out there? Now, look, Buzz, I believe you. You love the girl. Do you want her mixed up in all this?
Here we are, Jim.
Okay. That's the right house, isn't it?
Yeah. That's Norma's house.
All right, what's it going to be? Do we go in?
She'd cry. She'd only cry. Norma thinks a lot of me.
Yeah?
She's a swell girl. I don't want to have to tell her. She'd only cry.
Yeah.
I killed my aunt and uncle.
8 p.m. Buzz Apperson directed us to drive to San Pedro, to the west basin of the Los Angeles Harbor. We got out of the car and followed him to the end of one of the piers. He told us his story, and we put in a call to the office. Within half an hour, a fireboat and a barge were on the scene, and a diver was sent down into the water a few yards from the edge of the pier. We stood by and watched, Buzz Apperson, Ben, and I.
I put quite a bit of cyanide in the coffee. I had to be sure.
How'd you manage to get both of them in the car?
I waited till way after dark, and then I dragged them out. Drove down to the end of the pier right here, put the car in low. It went over, right where the diver went down, just this end of the barge.
All right, there's those lines up there. There's the first one.
You better stand back here.
Yeah, watch it.
Okay, sir.
Let's go. Buzz?
Yeah. My aunt.
Only one thing missing, Buzz.
Sir?
A reason. Why'd you do it?
I'm not sure anymore. Stolen car trouble, I guess. My trial was coming up. All that trouble. I didn't want my aunt and uncle to go through all that.
You mean that's why you killed him?
I think so. I didn't want him to be ashamed of me. That must sound funny.
Nobody's going to believe you.
Suppose they don't.
Yeah.
Would it make any difference?
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent. On December 15th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 92, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial.
And now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you. To successfully prosecute a criminal suspect, the working detective gathers all available physical evidence. And in the crime lab, this evidence is carefully selected and screened to determine its worth. So with the cigarette. The makers of Fatima select and buy the finest tobaccos, both Turkish and domestic. And these tobaccos are skillfully blended to make Fatima extra mild. Best of all, long cigarettes. Pack after pack, they're extra mild. Now, if you're a long cigarette smoker like I am, smoke Fatima.
Frank Buzz Apperson was tried and convicted of murder in the first degree and sentenced to life imprisonment. He is now serving his term in the state penitentiary. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, the best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet from Los Angeles. Coming up, Duffy's Tavern. Be sure to hear Theater Guild Sunday on NBC.
That's going to do it for Case Closed this week. You can find more from Crime and Peter Chambers, Dragnet, past episodes of this show, and all kinds of others at RelicRadio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is available there as well, and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Your support makes all of this possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.